Welcome to the Human and Technology Podcast. This podcast is for anyone who develops, distributes, or uses technology. For all those who always have the feeling that technology overwhelms or dominates them. For everyone who wants to know how to deal with technology in everyday life. For anyone who wants to understand what technology does to us and how we can get our lives back. This podcast is for those who want to make technology sexy. All the product developers, designers, UX, UI professionals, product managers, CTOs, and CEOs. And it is for you. My name is Dr. Peter Ryska. My friends call me Dr. Peter. I am your host, and I am happy that you are here. Hello, and welcome back to the Human Technology Podcast. I had a couple of strategic episodes in the past weeks, and so I made the decision to have something more technical, more concrete, more HMI oriented this week. So it is closely connected to developments of HMIs, human machine interfaces. Not so much the generic view on our industry, the world's technology, whatever. Everyone has an opinion on HMIs, has an opinion on technology. When you give a person some new device, and he or she doesn't know it, he right away develops an opinion. Interaction, first interaction, and then people have an idea. Yeah, I like this, I don't like this, this is easy to use, this is hard to use. And so you have these direct, spontaneous reactions, and it is relevant to humans. It is relevant to the users, how something is designed. And this is not only for, let's say, regular, naive users, but also for CEOs, CTOs, for everyone that is somewhat involved in the development or even not involved in the development. And all these people have an opinion, and all of them believe that their opinion is the only one that really counts. And this is a thing, this is a fate that we HMI designers share with chefs, for example. When I go to a restaurant, I sit down there and I get my food there, and I like it or I don't like it, and I can tell, yeah, he should have cooked it a little longer, or it's a little more spicy, it's too salty, whatever. So I have my opinion on this one. And it's the same with architects. When I see a building, I can say, yeah, that looks pretty good, oh, I like it, oh, lots of glass in it. And can also say, wow, this is super ugly. Yeah, this is, or car designers, product designers. We all share the same phenomenon that humans have a direct reaction to our work. And all these options are valid. It's okay that humans have them. Our job as professionals, HMI designers, chefs, architects, is not to cater every single individual, but to address 80%, or if you're really, really good, 90% of users. There are always people that don't like what you do. But if you meet 80% of your user group, then you're already, and then you have already done a pretty good job. Additionally, we aim to break habits and trigger innovation. When the first Apple iPhone came out, the HMI was totally new. And if people were just like, what, this is new? And they had a feeling, oh, this could be pretty good. But to break these habits and say, okay, we have something totally new here. So these are the two things that we as professionals do. And it's hard because in our organizations, people always have an opinion about this. So if you talk to some software guy or hardware developer, Nobody really cares about what these guys do. It just has to work. And nobody goes to a software developer and says, hey, I want you to put this line of code into a totally different position. But HMI designers, that people show up and say, hey, I want you to put this button into a different position. This is the typical thing. And to be able to handle this one, you need a set of parameters. It makes it much easier. Yeah? Not just my gut feeling and my professional experience, and they're all good, and they're all okay, and you can all use them. But if you have a set of established parameters, of scientific principles, then it makes life much, much easier. And there are many tools out there. There are many parameter collections out there, like the TRL checklist, the Nielsen's heuristics. Yeah, there are many out there that you can use. And in this episode, I want to focus on one of these, which is the ISO 9241. It's an international ISO standard. It has something like almost 50 different substandards that are in there. And it is very relevant. Not only in the automotive industry, it is relevant in any industry that you have, in any domain, wherever you are. And in this episode of the podcast, I'd like to focus on three aspects. One is the background and the history of ISO 9241. Then I will talk about the dialogue principles. They are put down in part 110. Many, by the way, believe that the part 110, that this is the entire ISO 9241, which is wrong. There are almost 50 other parts of the standards. And the third part will be that I will discuss three future challenges of the 9241, how it prepares for future challenges, and where I see open gaps that we need to think of as professionals in this area. Let's start with background and history. It is, as I said, an international standard. It's a series of different standards, and it focuses originally on the ergonomics of the human system interaction. So the original title was Ergonomic Requirements for Office Work with Visual Display Terminals. And this was the original title, and you can see it was for office spaces. It was invented in the early 80s, 1980s, when computers, PCs, suddenly popped up in workplaces. And there was the idea that this may be dangerous, we need to control this, we need to regulate this. And this is why the original versions of the 92, the ISO 9241, came out. In 2006, it was renamed to Ergonomics of Human System Interaction, which is a little more generic. It's not only on office spaces, and it is not about visual display terminals. It's in general about human system interaction. So it's a broader application you have now, and a wider range of domains where you can apply these standards. I already said it was invented in the 80s when PCs popped up on the desks of office workers. A significant milestone was the publication of then time part 11, now part 110 in 1998, which introduced a clear definition of usability. And I found this date during the research for this podcast episode, and I was surprised that it was so late, that it took until the late 1990s, almost the year 2000, until somebody defined usability. But I found this information in a reliable source, so I believe that this is true. And usability here in the ISO was defined as the extent to which a product can be used by a specific user to achieve a specific goal with effectiveness, efficiency, and satisfactions in specific contexts of use. So it's specific. Yeah? You have specific user groups. Usability of an aircraft cockpit is something totally different for a professional pilot compared to me that has never flown an aircraft. Yeah? So it is specific. And it's always in use cases and it's always about goals. When you just download a new app and you fiddle around with this, you play around with this without any goal in it, if you don't have a target, if you don't want to do something with it, you cannot test usability, you will never find out about usability. In the early times, an influential initiative was the European research project with a beautiful name, MUSIC, Measuring the Usability of Systems and Contexts, in the early 1990s. And they developed methods for measuring the effectiveness, efficiency, and satisfaction, the parameters of usability. And with that, they created the foundation for part 11, today part 110, of this standard. As I said, the ISO 9241 comprises almost 50 parts, covering various aspects of the ergonomics of workplaces, of describing processes. And two parts I want to focus more on is part 110, where the principles of dialogue design are put down. This is the major part of this episode. And as I said, many believe that part 110 is the only part making 9241, which is wrong, but it shows how important this one is. Yeah, and part 110 contains 7 principles. I will run through them in the next part of the podcast to how to design a good HMI solution. Another important part is 210. It defines the term user experience. And again, many believe that 210 is about user experience, which is wrong. Part 210 describes a human-centered design process for interactive systems, focusing on the importance of incorporating user needs throughout the entire development of a product. But in the introduction of 210, there is a definition of different terms, amongst others usability, which is the same definition as applied in the part 110, and user experience. And since this is the only place where user experience is defined, it's the only one we can use. And again, so a couple of people believe that 210 is about user experience, which, as I said, is wrong. It is a process standard. And these standards serve as guidelines for designing user-friendly, easy-to-use, cool-to-use, wow-effect-rich HMI systems. And they apply for different domains, different industries, to optimize the human-system interaction. The ISO has significantly contributed to raising the awareness about the importance of usability, ergonomics, user-friendliness in the design of software, hardware, products, HMIs in general. And you have this safe and structured foundation as a developer, as a designer, to create products that meet user needs and make them easy and fun to use. And at the end, make them better, create better sales on products. An ISO standard is not a law. It's not a legal thing in itself, but various legal regulations may refer to the ISO, and then this lifts the ISO standard onto the level of a law or any kind of legal regulation. Yeah, so there are a couple of workplace regulations that are in place and that are active in different countries, and they refer to the 9241. All right, so far on the introduction, the introductory part, Let's jump into the dialogue principles. And the first one is suitability for the task, task usability. This means that an HMI, a software, needs to have appropriate functionality to fulfill your task. So it shall be possible to fulfill the task that you have with the product, with the HMI, with the technology that you have. One example here, a friend of mine, she used Excel to write letters. And this is definitely not the suitable software for this. So the suitable software for writing a letter is Word. I think we all agree on this one, or any other kind of text program. I'm here in the Microsoft Office world. But we have this phenomenon, fact that any kind of text program like Word is the appropriate program, the appropriate software to write a letter. She used Excel, which is non-appropriate. It's not suitable for the task. To be fair, she was an accountant, and she always had calculations of taxes and bonuses and whatever. So she used the ability of Excel as a calculation software to write her letters. And so it was not totally, and there was a certain reason why she did it, but definitely, if you want to write a letter, Word is the suitable software. Second point, self-descriptiveness. Software, any HMI, needs to communicate out of itself. It needs to communicate to the user, this is what I can do, this is how you can do it, and I will show you when you are successful in doing this. So it's about the understandability that you as a user understand what's going on out of the software itself. Don't need a handbook, you don't need any additional help. Self-descriptiveness means out of itself. The system tells you what to do and how to do this. Next point, conformity with user expectations. First of all, this is about consistency, about external consistency. Humans, when they interact with a new piece of technology, they bring in their own experience. They had experiences in the past, and they bring this in. And if you reflect this one, if you match with the experiences and the expectations your users have, then it is easier to use. So we all knew, though, this two-finger zoom that was introduced by in the smartphone industry, but we find that in the car industry and many other applications and many other industries, exactly this one. And you know this from your smartphone, and then you go to into a car or to a machine, and you can reuse this one. This is external consistency, and this matches then to conformity with user expectations. And here we get another phenomenon, which is called the mental model. Everyone has a mental model of the world, of technology, of whatever is around. And when a user gets to a new piece of technology, he or she brings in a mental model, which may be influenced by previous experiences. But at the end of the day, it is a... a model that users bring in. We as developers, all the techie guys, we also have a model of technology. And technology guys are special. I'm also a technology guy. I studied mechanical engineering, so I'm an engineering guy, and all these software programmers. We have a brain that is wired in a different way than the brains of 90%, 80% of other humans. And this very often leads to problems in the interaction between humans and technology, because the developers put in their model, their mental model, into the technology. And this meets the mental model of a user. And there are differences. And then you do not have conformity with user expectations. By the way, this pays my bills. filling the gaps between developers' mental models and users' mental models. And so this is conformity with user expectations. Next point, learnability. Learnability means that you can learn this device easily. That the device, with its self-descriptiveness, with its conformity to user expectations, supports you in learning this. This is one part. And the other one is there are technologies that can be learned under certain aspects and others that cannot be learned under certain aspects. One example here is if you go into an automotive navigation infotainment systems, I drove over more than 20 years almost BMWs only. And so I got used to the BMW iDrive very well. It's a mechanical device mounted between the front seats. It has a rotary push. It has a couple of well-designed hard keys around it. And after a while, I was able to use it at least for a couple of use cases blindly. I could leave my eyes on the road, touch this one with my hand, and then I was able to say, okay, I have to rotate it twice to the right, then I have to click it, and then I have to select the upper right button, and then I have to shift the rotary to the left, and so on. So I was able to learn this to make a couple of things blindly. This will never be possible with a touchscreen system, since a touchscreen is not having appropriate haptic feedback. You always have to have, have to have a visual feedback loop. You always have to look at your fingertips when you use something. Yeah? When you want to find a button on a touchscreen, you have to look at it because you cannot feel it. So the learnability for blind use of the iDrive of a haptic device is better than for a touchscreen, which is having almost zero learnability. Some people tell me, yeah, I can use a touchscreen blindly, maybe to a very limited point, but not really. You need this visual feedback loop. So this is learnability. The next one is controllability. And if you ask me which of these seven is the most important one for me, I think it's controllability. Controllability means that the user controls the dialogue, that the user is in the driver's seat of the human technology interaction. If a user believes that he or she has full control over the process, and it's a perceived controllability, we cannot control that. I mean, at least if you go down to the level of bits and bytes that are pushed around on pieces of silicon, in a software-based HMI, then you cannot control it. Yeah, the system is doing whatever it is supposed to do. But if you give the feeling, if you give the user the perceived idea of controllability, then you have an easy-to-use system. There's nothing worse than a person that believes, oh, the system is doing something. Oh, I don't understand it. Oops, what's happening now? I haven't done anything and now it's moving. So this is some of the worst cases in human technology interaction you can have. And with this one, it is, controllability. If you give the feeling of controllability to the user, you get a good system. Next one, error tolerance. The system tolerates errors and allows easy correction by the user. So these are two different things. One thing is the easy correction. People do things wrong. They press the wrong button or they play around with the system to learn it. Then you always have to give an easy way to go back. And usually you have a back arrow that you press and then you jump one screen back. Or you have these little houses somewhere, or if it's a good HMI, always in the same location. There's a little house, and you press this one, you always get to the home screen. So this is an error-tolerant one. The other part of error-tolerance is that you do not do things, particularly if you delete stuff or if you destroy things in a technology. You should at least ask, hey, do you really want to delete this file? Now, if you delete this file, it will be gone forever. This is a way to create error tolerance and not just, oh, he pressed the delete button, so I'm going to delete the entire data set. So this is also error tolerance. And the last, the final one of these interaction principles, the dialogue principles, is user engagement. That is new, that is fresh. The ISO 9241 was reworked in 2020, and the new version contains user engagement as a dialogue principle. This is basically user experience. The system is inviting, it's motivating. It gives a positive feeling to the user while interacting with this. And this is, yeah, user experience, which is something slightly different, and I think it's worth making another episode on what is usability and what is user experience and how do the two relate. Today, just to say user engagement, the seventh dialogue principle of the ISO 9241 is user engagement. What is the future role of the ISO 9241? I see three different HMI trends in the future, and two of them are reflected here. The first one is humane HMI, human-centric HMIs. Yeah, the integration of multi-model modal interaction means ways, not only a screen, not only a touchscreen, not only a haptic device, but also voice and vibrations, and so that you get a full multimodal interaction. And I call this humane interaction because if we interact from humans to humans, a complete interaction is always multimodal. Yeah? At the moment, you can only hear me. I had the suggestion lately, hey, why don't you make a video podcast? Oh, no, oh, I would need to comb my hair before this one and put on a certain shirt. You don't want to know how I sit right here at the moment. But that will be a little more multimodal. So at the moment, it's not 100% natural communication. Maybe you're doing something different here. At the moment, you're driving a car, or yeah, you're ironing your shirts, or whatever you do. But it's not a complete interaction we have here. If you see me on stage, that's different. That is complete. And that's humane. And the ISO increasingly considers multimodality. For instance, the parts 910 and 920 provide frameworks and guidelines for tactile and haptic interactions. Now, these are parts that show that a multimodal interaction is considered by the 9241, which then, again, as I said, raise intuitivity and user friendliness. Second trend that I see is augmented and virtual reality. The ISO is continuously evolving to meet the demands of modern multi-layer interaction. So virtual reality and augmented reality, particularly augmented reality. Let's start with that one. Augmented reality means that you overlay the analog real world with additional information. That may be with some kind of augmented reality glasses. This may be with an head-up display. But you put information, usually based on digital data, over the analog world. Yeah, you have a navigation arrow saying, hey, make a right here, or over here is your charger where you can charge your car. I sometimes would like to have something like augmented reality glasses that tell me who am I talking to. Very often at conferences, meetings, I talk to someone and say, hey, I know this person. I have met him or her many, many times before. But who is it? I'm very bad in remembering names. And then an augmented reality glass tell me, all right, this is Joe Doe, this is Joe Smith, would be very, very helpful for me. This is augmented reality. Virtual reality is the full immersion into a fully digital world that is totally immersive, where you go into this and it has nothing to do with the environment you're in. And here, a new part, the 820 from 2024, provides ergonomic human factors, HMI guidelines for interaction in immersive environments. And it addresses specific challenges in designing systems that use virtual reality, augmented reality, or mixed reality, which is a mix of virtual and augmented reality. So it seems like for this trend, the ISO is pretty well prepared, and they will become more important in the future. The third trend are artificial intelligence, HMIs. HMIs that adapt to users, to use cases, to contexts, to environments based on artificial intelligence. And for me, this has a very high potential to improve usability and user experience, but also at the same time, it has a high potential to destroy internal consistency, to destroy user trust, to confuse users heavily. Because if I start suddenly changing the HMI, and even if I mean it good, if I say, yes, this will improve usability, users will be confused and saying, hey, there was a button yesterday, where is it? Or there was a different name on this one. Why is it renamed right now? Yeah? And then they have changed the colors of this. Why did they do this? So, and this is for me a very delicate balance that we need to find if we introduce HMIs that are based on artificial intelligence. And future additions, future additions may include specific guidelines for designing AI HMIs, but I haven't seen any so far. For me, this is one of the steps that we need to do with the ISO 9241, saying, all right, this is something that where we need to do some work, where we need to have some focus on to make, you know, to find this delicate balance between user acceptance and avoiding frustration on one side, and getting the optimum out of an artificial intelligence steered based human machine interface. So, to summarize this one, the principles of the human centered designs, as outlined in the 9241, with the dialogue principles, remain central. They were central in the past, they are central in today, and they will be in the future at least as important as they are today. We need to emphasize the needs, the dreams, the abilities of users to make technology easy to access, fun to use, to make technology at the very end successful in the market, so that we have good sales in this one. That's it for today. Thank you for spending time with me. I hope you were able to take something with you and do something for yourself that will be forever. For an ongoing exchange, you will find me on LinkedIn and on my websites, peter-rusker.com and beyond-hmi.de. Write me an email on the podcast at beyond-hmi.de. Tune in next time, take care, and stay healthy.